14 May?
Pardon me?
14 May?
14 May.
Jason Clark doing Myth TV.
So, tonight we've got Jason Clark. He's been involved with Unix for 13 years, recent transplant from Kansas City. We're glad to have him over here. For quite some time, a number of us have been talking about Myth TV and Freevo and Geekbox and the other products like that. Not products, I guess, the apps like that. So we've had some interest, and finally Jason is going to actually do a presentation and get us into the technicalities of it. So we've been looking forward to this. Welcome, Jason Clark.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you guys very much. Today we're going to be looking at Myth TV. Specifically, we're going to be messing with Myth Ubuntu. There's a Ubuntu version of just about everything, so why leave Myth out? They just recently released version 8.0.4, latest and greatest. It is the new stable version. It has a few quirks, but overall it works very, very well. Now, I do have to caveat, the machine we're working on had a little bit of a hiccup earlier this afternoon, and the heatsink fell off the processor. Got a little warm, so if it was perfectly stable until then. So we may see a few little hiccups and quirks and blame it on the hardware. There we go. So the first thing we're going to go over is, what is Myth TV? Myth TV, by and large, the core part of Myth TV is that it's a DVR, a digital video recorder. So let's define how DVRs came into existence. The basic function of a DVR is to take the time you have available for watching TV and either extend that time by allowing you to be able to schedule it when it's most convenient for you, or to compress that time by allowing you to do things like skipping commercials and moving around in a recording as you see fit. TiVo is the first thing that comes to most people's mind when you talk about a DVR. They were early to market. They did a great job grabbing mindshare, and they have a fairly good product. Myth TV came along about 4 years ago. Incredibly immature product at the time, very unstable, but I have a very understanding wife who let me put it in the house anyway. So what we have here, Myth TV, is an open source DVR, but it goes beyond that. It could be a DVD jukebox, an MP3 player, a photo slideshow. You can burn and rip DVDs, play video games, stream internet content, forecast the weather. There are all kinds of great things you can do with Myth TV. I, for example, have mine set up at home that when I fire up a DVD, it dims my lights. So it turns the stereo up, dims the lights, and gets us ready for movie mode. Myth got its name. Oh yeah, we're not going to go into that in this presentation, but I'll do another one in about 2 months that'll have the advanced functionality and the home automation piece. Myth got its name because the writers of the software were aiming for the mythological home convergence device that everybody was talking about. You remember, a couple years ago, everybody was looking for that convergence device. It was going to control everything in your home, order your groceries, walk the dog, wash the laundry. It was going to do it all. So with that in mind, Myth TV was born. What do I need to run Myth? Very first question out of everybody's mouth. Myth is divided into two core components. You have the front end and you have the back end. Your front end is there for the display. This is what sits next to your TV. This is the piece that you want to have that looks shiny and nice and is quiet and isn't obtrusive, and it just has to display video. That's its core component. It can do a lot more, and we'll get into that, but at its basic, it has to display video. Your back end does all the heavy lifting. Your TV tuner cards exist in your back end. Your storage exists back there. Your heavy networking, all that fun stuff, is in the back end. Think of it as your regular hub and spoke type architecture, where you can have multiple front ends connecting into one back end, and everybody's sharing content and having a grand old time. There is a good hardware database on what types of hardware have been tested with Myth TV at pvrhw.goldfish.org. Check it out. A lot of the basic "will my motherboard work" type questions are answered there. For a standard definition front end, again, this is just displaying video. Basically, you're looking at a first generation Microsoft Xbox, of which Myth TV will install quite happily for those of you who have one. 733 megahertz Pentium 3. You can read the slide right there. One of the key things to notice here is that with a standard definition So regular old over-the-air, cable box, whatever, standard definition content, 802.11g is perfectly acceptable. 802.11b ain't going to work. But G, you can do a wireless DVR over 802.11g. Sound card support, try to get something supported by ALSA, especially if you want to do some of the more advanced features like optical audio out, coaxial audio, 5.1 surround sound. Also, supported sound cards are your best bet. But any Linux-supported sound card will work. High definition is a little more entertaining. High definition, you should really consider your minimum CPU for displaying high definition content, which I define as 1080i or 1080p, being a 3 gigahertz CPU. Now, you can get that CPU requirement down pretty significantly. You can get it down to about a 2 gigahertz CPU if you use a hardware-accelerated video card. We're talking about newer NVIDIA 7000 and higher series video cards. Wi-Fi is not an option on high definition. You can try 802.11n. I've tried it myself, but I haven't had any luck with it. Yeah?
You might want to distinguish between streaming and moving files from back end to front end and then place.
They're all streamed. The way it works is that the files are never actually moved to a front end. In fact, a lot of my front ends don't even have hard drives.
No, I'm saying you could put a hard drive in there.
You could put a hard drive in there and then copy the file over and display it that way. Sure, then that's whatever medium you have to transfer the file over. But as Myth TV tries to function with the everything being streaming, really need to focus on some high bandwidth. 802.11n, the only time I got it to work was in my basement where I was surrounded by concrete and there was nobody else to compete with me for signal. So keep that in mind. If you live in a cave, Wi-Fi may work out for you.
Look at your audience here, sir.
Sorry?
NVIDIA cards,
6800 series or higher, if you're wanting to do some high-def content. You can get by with less if you're willing to do lower-end, 720i kind of video. But at the end of the day, Myth is going to grow larger than you initially planned. You're going to find features that you like. There's going to be neat little things that you discover it can do. Go ahead and spend the extra bucks.
How about a USB 2 flash device? You think you can place content and stream it right off of that?
For streaming?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's HD content is basically 9.5 gigabyte per hour. So if you had a fast USB flash drive and a decent amount of RAM so you could do good I.O. cache, you could probably pull that off. But you're kind of back in the realm of Sneakernet at that point. That's always an option. I know we copied, when we were on 802.11g, before we had the wires ran in the house, we copied the Transformers trailer in high def. 30-second trailer, and it was like 280 meg. Had to copy it to the TV to see it in all its high def glory, and it was worth it. Back-end requirements. This piece is fairly key, especially if you're looking at doing a distributed back-end and front-end architecture. When we walk out of here today, we're not going to do a distributed architecture. Today we're going to build a combined system where everything is housed on one box, which is perfectly acceptable. No problems with that at all. There's just some extra processing requirements we had to think about. But if you want to do a dedicated back-end, you need to have a supported television tuner card. That means V4L, it's Video for Linux compatible, or a Hoppig PVR line card. This space, we're talking about 1.5 gigabyte per hour for standard definition. That's at 5,000K, which is generally considered DVD quality. Or 9.5 gig per hour for high definition. When you're talking about RAM, I usually do 256 mega RAM per tuner plus 512 as the base. The back end runs a MySQL database that can grow fairly large over the years. And RAM is cheap. Network connection, again, we already talked about Wi-Fi, 10100 or 10100 hardwire for HD. So CPU is very dependent on the type and number of capture cards you have installed. The PVR series cards and the HVR series cards from Hoppig are hard capture cards. They actually have an MPEG encoder right there on the chip. So as the data stream comes into the card, there's no additional processing that your box has to do. It just writes an MPEG stream across the PCI bus straight to disk. Done and done. they take hardly any CPU at all. In fact, I've had a 300 megahertz Celeron with a hop and capture card working just splendidly as a back end. But I do recommend about 450 megahertz per tuner card for your back end. The V4L cards, the software cards that are based on the BTTV chipsets, the Philips SAA7131 chipsets, these are the cards you're going to find on eBay for $19 that come with a remote and all kinds of craziness. They do all their capture in software. Basically, the only thing on that card is the tuner to grab the signal off of the air. Then it dumps that straight across the PCI bus, and then your processor has to go through and convert that signal into something that you understand later on, MPEG, AVI, whatever. Those guys take a lot of CPU time. Plan on 1 gigahertz at least per tuner card, and honestly, I would avoid them unless you just want to play around and just want to get a really low cost of entry into seeing if MythTV is right for you.
I guess the hopping cards are significantly more expensive than these.
Yes. Yeah. The Hopic cards come in, and interest of full disclosure, I need to say that Hopic donated the high definition card that we're going to be giving away. So keep that in mind. I do like them. I've used them for years, but do keep that in mind. The hardware cards have a lot more silicon involved on them, so yeah, they are more expensive. You're looking at, for a standard def PVR 150, which is the bottom end of their hardware capture line, you're looking at $59. If you want more features, if you want built-in remote control support, which you can actually get right in the card, it's like $65. The new high-definition cards they came out with, in particular the HVR 1600, it's kind of a neat card. It has a high-definition tuner built into it and a standard definition tuner. So you actually get two tuners on one card. Those go for like $85. No, they're not too expensive at all. If you want to get wild with it, you can certainly spend a whole lot of money on building quite the TV station in your basement.
Let's say you had multiple tuners, multiple captures.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have issues of congestion across the PCI bus?
PCI bus, no.
Software based.
Not the PCI bus, but you will run into disk I/O issues, mm-hmm. and we'll cover that. Myth has a really neat way of addressing that just came out. So picking a tuner, as we just discussed, I really prefer the Hopic PVR and HVR series cards. Any V4L compatible card, though, will work, except for the ATI All-in Wonders. They are V4L supported, but they don't implement the entire V4L API. So, or features, excuse me. Yeah, they're about halfway there. Now, the ATI All-in Wonder is not the ATI TV Wonder. Those are two different cards. Don't get them confused. The TV Wonder will work, but it's one of those software-based cards that's going to take an unholy amount of processing time. The HVR cards are a very, very interesting little project to watch. I got the card from Hopic 2 weeks ago. When it arrived, high definition didn't work. Standard definition worked, but it had no audio. 2 weeks later, high definition works, standard definition works, audio works across the board. Hopic, I guess, sent a little note to some of the guys working on these cards, and all of a sudden they were able to develop a whole massive driver within 2 weeks. This is a fast-moving target, so you may run into a few driver issues, a few little bugs with the HVR series cards, but it is developing very quickly. Expect those to be knocked out. In fact, they've already got the existing code base that they just rolled out 2 days ago submitted to go into a 2.6.26 kernel. IVTVdriver.org. I don't have that on here, but I will. I'll get that on there. The IVTV driver is a project to support all of Hopic's hardware card line. But most of that is built right into the kernel now, so you don't even have to mess with it. There's one other product that definitely bears mentioning called the HD Home Run. This is a cool little box. It's about yay big. Has two high definition tuners built into it, and a 10100 Ethernet connection. You plug it into your coax, you plug it into your Ethernet, and it becomes an IP addressable way to get 1080i HD streams over your Ethernet without having to put any PCI cards in your machine, no nothing to mess with. They're about $180. They are kind of expensive, but they're way cool.
Hey, how do you get HD off the cable?
By law, cable providers that provide standard definition terrestrial...
No, what I'm saying is, When you hook an HD tuner to Charter cable, mm-hmm. you can't get HD.
Yeah, you can.
You have to decode it.
There are two classes of HD channels. There's encrypted and unencrypted. QAM 256 is what Charter runs,
right.
But they also have to support ClearQAM. All their ClearQAM channels are in 105 and above. We'll see some of those when we fire this guy up. But those are only the terrestrial channels that they have to broadcast by law. Pretty much all the content you're going to pull off channel, I've tuned them in on here. I'll show you some when we pull this up. Again, I had a lot of difficulty tuning mine, and I think it was because of my house. But yes.
I have a HDTV that I just plugged in to Charter a couple months ago, and playing around with it, I found that the channels seem to be sprinkled around.
Mm-hmm.
To get the weather, high definition weather channel, I go to channel 2, and then I tune down because it's at 1.3.
Yeah, the high definition channels are all on a sub-channel. Mm-hmm. If you go to SiliconDust.com, which is the manufacturer who makes the HD Home Run, they have this fantastic database. Put in your zip code, and they will give you every single high-def channel that can be picked up either via cable or via over the air, and their sub-channels.
Silicon Dust.
Kind of an odd name. I believe Silicon Dust would more technically be called sand. But I think that domain was taken. So.
That brings up the interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Let's say you were trying to capture over the air sub-channels from PBS. Can you do that on a home run?
Absolutely. Smack an antenna on it. The key distinction to remember is that over the air, high definition, you can pick up just like you would over the air anything else. Mm-hmm. Smack an antenna on, you're good to go. If you plug in a Charter's cable, almost every high-def channel they have on there is going to be encrypted, and you cannot decrypt them.
No.
The only way you can decrypt them is if you get a cable box from Charter, right? But then you're back to doing S-video or something to get your high-def into one of these machines.
S-video isn't high-def.
Exactly. Cable card is supposed to be the interface that was, okay, we're going to plug this cable card into a machine, and cable card is going to do the decryption for us and have all these nice secure pieces, but there's only one machine that has a cable card. It's for Windows MCE, and I don't believe it actually functions because I haven't heard a single thing out of it.
Wow. The cable card works.
They do, but hardly anybody supports them. I mean, they're... Do they support them?
Yeah.
Cool.
No.
TV.
What's up?
Yeah, I'm subscribed to Charter Basic Service with about a dozen analog channels. We were making some comment that Charter has to put some channels out digitally on my cable line by law.
Right.
So are you saying that those are already on my cable line?
They're already there.
Without you paying anything more to Charter?
Without you paying anything more. The over-the-air high-definition signals, by federal law, cable providers have to put on there unencrypted. ClearQAM is what they call it. It's sitting there on the wire.
2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean they're over the air. They're free anyway. You should be able to tune into those channels. Now keep in mind, I've done that with this device. I have had a hell of a time getting ClearQAM working on Charter. Some nights it works, some nights it doesn't work. I don't know why. I think it's my fault. So keep that in mind. Yes, sir.
Those secondary video channels that we get over the air will not be on Charter.
They which ones?
Like Channel 9 has like 3 or 4 alternate channels.
I don't know.
Well, actually, I have found 2 of the 4 KTC channels on my cable. I just haven't put one that hard.
Yeah. And that's an interesting statement that really kind of summarizes the state of the high definition industry right now. I found. You know, there's not a whole lot of documentation out there at the moment. A lot of this is going to be searched.
But you're dealing with it through Charter as opposed to over the air.
And Charter's not going to be especially... They're not going
to
be especially vocal about, hey, you can get some of these channels in high def. But
what's going on over the air is fraught with...
Yeah, if you purchase basic cable service from Charter, so your cable signal comes in over a coax, not digital, comes in over coax, they have to, by law... Any channel that they transmit currently right now, standard definition, that falls under over-the-air, so your local PBS station or whatever, they have to also transmit that in high definition in ClearQAM that you can pick up on any set.
In the high definition.
What channel you put it on is one of
the right. They,
example channel.
This box I tuned into one of the PBS stations. I can't remember which one, but it was on 90 sub 3. And it worked on Tuesday night. It didn't work on Wednesday. And like I said, I'm pretty sure that's me, but
it's charter.
It may be.
Also,
their PBS are they? If you guys don't mind, I'm gonna bust this a little bit more, and we're gonna be a part where we do an install that we'll have plenty of time for a lot more questions.
There's other questions later. Milan's. You're coming to Milan's, right?
All right.
Okay, we'll stop you an hour and see you want it.
There we go. So let's talk about combined system requirements, which is what we're going to build right here. This box has 1 gig of RAM, it has 1 gig of RAM in it. Again, we have a box that's going to be running MySQL, it's going to be running Apache, it's going to be running a whole bunch of different software services, X Windows. So I think a gig of RAM is pretty realistic. 250 gig hard drive, that equates to roughly 200 some hours of standard definition recording, or 24 hours of high definition recording. Keep that in mind. GeForce 6600 or higher video card. The ATI / AMD cards are also supported. I've had a lot better luck with the GeForce series cards, but you know, take it how you like it. Also supported sound card. And then for standard definition, we're looking at about a gig and a half of CPU and a PVR 150 MCE card, which is the bottom end of the Hoppig PVR line. High definition, you're looking at 3 gigahertz CPU and an HVR 1800. You can, again, get that CPU down to 2 gigahertz if you are spending the extra money on video card. Remote controls. Myth is designed to be entirely controlled by a remote control. You will not have a keyboard hanging off of your home theater system sitting in front of your wife. Myth was designed to pass the spouse test in every regard. Because, I mean, let's face it, when we sit down to watch TV, we don't want to have to think about, oh, is this Alt F3? Is this W? Is this C? I just want to watch American Chopper. Just get Mikey on the screen and I'm happy. This is 100% compatible with all LIRC supported remote controls. And if you've ever looked into LIRC, there are a lot of supported remote controls. The key is your IR blaster and your IR receiver. Some of the Hoppig line of cards have the IR receiver and IR blaster built right into the card. They come with this handy-dandy little dongle. This part is the receiver. This part is the blaster. For those of you not familiar with the terminology, the receiver is obviously what receives the IR signal from your remote. The blaster is capable of transmitting an IR signal. So if you have a cable box you need to control, you get digital cable and you got to change the channels that way, this is the guy that does it. Come on. The what?
IR.
Yeah, infrared. Uh-huh. In addition, most of the Microsoft MCE remote controls and USB receivers now work. That wasn't the case a couple months ago. The only one that doesn't work is version like 0.1 of the MCE remote. If it has a trackball in the middle, avoid it. Myth does support FireWire for controlling some cable boxes. Motorola in particular had a couple of digital cable boxes out that you could control over FireWire and actually get the digital video stream straight through the FireWire port. Not many people use those. I haven't seen them really in circulation for a while. Getting the software, there are lots and lots of options for installing Myth. Excuse me. If you're running Ubuntu, Fedora on your existing machine, you could do an apt-get or a yum install of Myth, and it will install. Live CDs are always the best way to play around without doing any kind of damage. Mythbuntu, Ubuntu-based distribution we're going to be using. Mythdora is based on Fedora, not Myth, based on Nopix. Zebian, based on Debian, but also is the distribution that runs on the Xbox Classics. Goodness, guys, excuse me. You install Zebian Myth and you just turn an Xbox into a Myth TV front end. iMedia is a distribution customized for many ITX boards. And all of them come pre-canned and ready to go. After lots of trials, I've been playing around with pretty much all of them. I am very happy with Mibuntu 804, which is what we're going to go through right now. Has live CD support in the same ISO image as the one that installs on your desktop. Has a really neat feature of allowing you to netboot a front end, so your front end doesn't have to have a hard drive. You could pixie boot your front ends. You could have zero moving parts, and you can do all your front end control and package additions right from the back end control center. Never have to touch your front end to add software. A unique feature is they have the Myth Control Center. That's a very slick way to handle adding codecs, changing remote controls, fun things like that. And it just works. And it's pretty. So So again, we're doing a combined front-end back-end install. We are not going to configure front-ends for NetBoot, but that is an option for a later presentation. We will make additional front-ends possible. This install does wipe your system clean. Don't test this on the wife's desktop. Use caution or use tapes, as always. And the CD can be used as a live CD or will run in virtualization very well. We're going to be doing the initial install on my laptop using KVM. Once we get to a point where we actually have to do some hardware configuration, we're going to switch over to this guy that I've already built and I've installed a bunch of media on so we can do a little play. All right, install tips. This is the one time you will need a mouse and a keyboard hooked up. You're going to need an Ethernet connection, and we're going to use the advanced install option to allow us to configure additional front ends. So any questions before we get started about hardware capabilities, anything like that? Very good. All right. I'm looking at the wrong screen. There we go. So bear with me for just a moment here while I create the virtual machine. Would you guys at any point like to go into a virtualization presentation? Or? All right. That's the wrong folder. This is KVM. This is I've got VirtualBox, VMware, KVM. I pretty much play with them all. KVM, the kernel virtual machine. It's the one that's actually in the Linux kernel itself. It's pretty slick. It is a Ubuntu, Fedora. They all come with it pre-installed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I apologize for the frog in my throat here. Okay. Keep in mind we are doing this install on a laptop, so it's going to be a little slower than what you might expect to do on your desktops. All right. So this is, right now we're booting off the CD. Nothing too too exciting there. Sure I have nothing else. Yep, I just gotta do that part. This, by the way, is the flash, is the splash screen that you're gonna see every time your MythBox boots. You're not gonna have to stare at crazy text scrolling by and something that frightens you. That is a spouse factor. That's a spouse factor. And, you know, and I joke about it a bit, but that was really kind of the test. Because, like I said, when you sit down in front of the TV, you don't want to think. You know, sometimes you may be there to be stimulated. Carl Sagan may be on, and you know, you haven't seen Cosmos in forever, and you know, you may be there just to get your learn on. But by and large, you're just wanting to veg out. And man, if you got to sit at the keyboard and go, gosh, I can't remember if I hit an F here, or if this is a 3 to go to full screen, it gets very frustrating. And that's the initial way we deployed Myth in my house, is we had a wireless keyboard, and we were like, hey, we've got the biggest remote on the block. You know, wow! And that worked out well for me. And I convinced my wife that it worked well for her, and then my in-laws came over.
And it's called a learning curve.
It was, we got a remote real quick. Yeah, we got a remote real quick. So right now, the installer is booting into the live CD environment. Neat thing about this, if you already had a Myth TV network set up at home, Myth deploys its own universal plug-and-play network. So as you add new front ends, they'll automatically detect your back end. They'll automatically add themselves to the network. You will be prompted for a password and a PIN to allow that to happen. But you could take a live CD on a laptop, give it to your kid, and say, hey, here you go. Nope, now you're grounded. Give it back. And no harm done in the machine, other than what your kid would do. Okay. Utilar. And probably going to have to blow the resolution up here a little bit. I hope this will... There we go. Okay. So, we just double-click down here on Install Ubuntu. And I know it's probably going to be a little difficult to read back there, so I'll go over most of the screens. This should be very familiar. This is just the standard tried-and-true Ubuntu installer. If you haven't seen it yet, you're running the wrong distribution. We are in Chicago. Just picking keyboard. Nothing special here. Nothing new.
Texas.
This is true. This is the one part that you may need to put a little bit of attention into. How do you want to install the software? Do you want it to wipe the entire drive clean and use all the space it has available, or do you want to go through and do some picking of the partitioning? Generally, I just use it's a dedicated machine. Use the whole disk.
You can always repartition later.
Yeah. All right. And again, this is still just the standard Ubuntu installer. So, all right, here's where we need to pay a little bit of attention. We need to do an advanced installation. The reason why is because if you do a standard installation, it assumes that you are setting up a dedicated back-end and front-end machine that will never have any other front-ends connecting to it. And that may be the case. But later on down the road, you may decide, hey, no, I'd really like to add another front-end in the guest room. You can always go back and change that, but involves changing a MySQL password and setting a PIN and things like that. It's just easiest to do it at install. And it doesn't take up any extra disk space or do any kind of damage. So here's where we pick the function of the DVR. Remember saying we're doing a combined back-end and front-end? So that's the first option that's picked there. You can do a really neat system with Myth that allows for secondary back-ends, right? So let's say you're putting a TV system in a hotel, right? And you've got a rack full of machines that have five PCI cards each, and you've smacked TV tuners in every single one of those machines. And now you have the option of, I can carve up, each floor gets access to this particular machine and its five tuners, and if more than five people are watching TV, darn, that sucks. Or you can use some of the functionality built into Myth TV, where Myth TV acts as the broker for all those tuners and all that access. And you can just say, connect to this master backend, which acts as the traffic broker, and it handles assigning tuners on any of the slave backends that it has available. It also allows you to do things like commercial flagging, which is a fairly intense process where Myth goes through and looks at each individual video frame and tries to determine, is this a commercial, flags it, and then goes along its merry way. You can offload that onto a slave backend. So the box that's doing your capturing isn't the box that has to do your commercial flagging.
This panel doesn't appear if you do the basic install, right?
This panel does appear.
Oh.
There's a panel later on that won't appear, but it doesn't have as many options. Basically, you have primary back-end and front-end, and you have front-end. So there we go. Notice there is no option for just... Oh, actually, yes, there is now. There wasn't an option for just a back-end, and now there is. Back-end plugins. The one that installs in the back end is Myth Web. This allows you to connect to Myth TV over a web browser and basically control it, stream video, whatever you want to do. You can schedule recordings from your web browser. You can stream recordings back to your PC over a web browser. When I was traveling a lot, I actually had my Myth box sitting in a DMZ, and I could connect to it from over the road and watch TV. Yeah, over the internet. Front-end plugins. I mean, it does a lot of transcoding and makes it a flash video, so you're not streaming straight MPEG over the internet. But, yeah, I never miss Battlestar Galactica.
Hijack?
And no. No.
Or quarter SVGA.
I wish. So here are front-end plugins. Some of these you may never use. For example, Myth Phone. You can actually turn a Myth TV front end into a SIP VoIP video phone. I don't know if I want to reach out and touch somebody on a 52-inch screen, but you have that option.
What do you do?
That's right.
Myth Flix allows you to connect to your Netflix queue, so you can look at your Netflix queue and update it in real time. We'll go over the plugins a little bit later here, but this is where you choose on which of them you're going to install. I always install them all. And then we have our themes on how we make Myth TV look pretty. Again, I usually install them all. Some of them are pretty cool. Some of them are just kind of silly, but hey, they're available.
Just a little bit of disk space for...
Yeah, it's just JPEGs. Yep. So one of the things that isn't enabled by default, and I don't know why, is the VNC service. You enable the VNC service by checking that box and just giving it a password. And what that allows you to do is, if your front end should crash, you don't have to drag the keyboard out, plug in, and go and fire it back up. Just connect to it over VNC and move on. When we go to the advanced section, I'll actually show you how to make it automatically restart in the event of a crash, but that's for another session. NFS service, this is mostly applicable to backends. You can share out the disk space that's on your backend with the rest of your front ends. So if you were doing the netboot thing we were talking about, MP3s, stuff like that, you actually have to copy to every front end. All right? Unless you use some kind of shared storage. Samba, Windows File Share, NFS, something like that. So, enabling the NFS service is just going to buy you a little bit extra flexibility.
That brings up an interesting thing. On audio?
What was that?
On audio?
Uh-huh.
Like you're saying MP3. What about FLAC and AUG?
Anything that MPlayer or Zine will support, MythTV will support. So you could throw just about anything you want to at it.
I don't think...
FLAC and AUG are supported. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, MPlayer. That's
yep, absolutely. I'm pretty sure MPlayer can play two stones being beaten together and turn it into some kind of video. It's awesome stuff.
That and VLC. Right?
Exactly. And VLC also is on here for support, too. The MythTV service...
would iSCSI...
I actually, at home, I have a 2.5 terabyte iSCSI SAN that I back my MythTV back into. Works just fine. I netboot Pixie clients, and they get their root file system off of iSCSI. We could go into that presentation someday, too.
the meeting will be at your house.
There you go. Did I mention I live like 2 blocks from EPC?
Oh,
it may have something to do with it. The MythTV service, this allows you to have multiple front ends connecting to one back end. You need this. Just click it.
When you were talking about the I/O requirements of MythTV, was that taking NFS service into account for Samba?
Yes and no. Most you're not going to be doing your... The I/O requirements really are tied to capture, right? You're not going to be doing your capture over an NFS mount. Or a Samba mount, most likely. A lot of your disk space is going to be right there. If you are, just make sure you have enough I/O on your Samba server and a fast enough Ethernet link between your backend and your Samba server to support the I/O you're going to be doing. Most of the disk writes are not IOP heavy. It's a lot of big blocks being written to disk and a big stream.
So this is one where you probably want to set your file system chunk sizes.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. EXT3 has actually performed very well for me. I know there was some talk about whether or not what file system to use with Myth. I don't know if that was this mailing list or another one.
Yeah, it was
XFS, EXT3. In my experience, again, we're working with, I've got a terabyte and a quarter of DVD jukebox online, and I'm working with large data sets, and I've had no problems at all with EXT3. Myth Web Security. Remember talking about how you can connect to a web page, control Myth TV, do some streaming, all that fun stuff? Passwords for that web page are a good thing unless you want somebody to set you up to record all the Section of the City episodes for the next 2 years. So just pick a username and password that you like.
Standard port 80 or
what? Yeah, port 80. You can, it's Apache, so you can make it whatever you'd like. But MySQL Server root password. This is always a good thing to set. It will come up with a random one on its own, but I would set one.
It's nice to know it. That's what it is, not you.
All right. Remote controls. Right off the bat, it's asking us, do we want to do remote controls? We have two sections here. The remote control and the IR transmitter or the blaster. If you don't enable this here, it will give you the opportunity to enable it later on, but I'm just going to pop it through just so you can see what it looks like. So enable remote control. We have a couple of remote controls already defined for us. Some of them you might recognize. Where's that Apple one? There's an Apple one on here. Oh, there it is. The Mac Mini USB remote. You can turn a Mac Mini into a MythTV front end, just FYI. we're working with a Hopig card. So here we have a Hopig TV card. They provide what's affectionately known as the gray remote with some of their cards, in particular the MCE series. Good remote, works just fine. Some of the buttons you got to push fairly hard, but it's nice and light, and you don't feel bad if the dog eats it.
So you're looking for the regular
any
Apple remote?
for the IT board.
Yep. It will support any remote that is going to talk to an IR receiver that's supported by LIRC. Right? So the key here is not what remote you're using. The key is what receiver you're using on Myth TV. LIRC, if you've never messed with it, has a mode where you can actually record a command. So let's say you have a remote control that this thing has never seen before. You can set it up into record mode and say, all right, I press this button. It goes, hey, I got this button. Press it one more time. Okay, I saw the same button. What do you want to name it? I'll call it play. Right? So if you have a remote control you absolutely love and adore, but there isn't a channels.conf already set up for it, you can create one pretty easily. The Mythbuntu wiki and actually the MythTV wiki have really great step-by-step instructions on how to do that. We have a Sony remote at home that my wife is quite comfortable with. She knows where the buttons are, and there we go. I'm sorry? Nope. I had to record every button. Able IR transmitter. Now, this is important if you have a digital cable box that you're going to be connecting to your tuner card, and you're going to be changing the channel on the cable box, right? So, digital cable, whatever.
Or the digital box.
That would be in that category also. Transmitters are a bit more narrowly defined. Basically, we have the Hoppig PVR series again. We have the Windows Media Center USB series. And then we have these generic serial UARTs. There's some instructions online how to build your own IR transmitter. It takes like two components and some wire. It's really, really simple. But what you'll notice here is they've also defined generic categories for the type of receiver. Motorola, Dish Network, DirecTV, Scientific Atlanta, etc. All you got to do is pick the hardware that closely matches your transmitter, and then the brand of cable box that you're talking to. Odds are, it'll work just fine.
Back up a second. Where do you select your receiver?
It's right. You see there's a
receiver.
Five
IR
entries
receiver.
Here. Uh-huh. Oh, IR receiver?
Yeah.
That is under remote control here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That is under remote control here. Some of these cards, when you're talking about like the Hoppig TV card, have that already built in. So all these remotes that they have defined come with a receiver. So like if you look down here, we've got the Windows Media Center remotes.
Oh, that's why the Apple is.
Exactly.
It comes with the Apple.
Exactly. And there are a couple RF remotes supported, like this X10 MP3 Anywhere remote. I've never played with them. So in theory, they should be wonderful.
So basically, if you have a media player remote, it knows what the IR receiver
is. Yep. I'm going to disable IR transmitter. One of the things, when you enable the IR transmitter, you're also enabling a channel changer script. So when you go and you change the channels on the remote, it's not going to try to change the channel on the TV card. It's going to try to change the channel over the IR blaster on your cable box. So in this case, on the hardware we have here, would not work out well.
You can reconfigure that.
Yep. All right, front-end video drivers. So we'll click on Modify Video Drivers here. We have a couple options. The PVR 350 is a card that Hoppig came out with that had a hardware MPEG capture device and a hardware MPEG decoder device, so you could hook your TV and your cable box into the same line. Completely offloaded all your processing except for disk I.O. Never really sold that well because the only thing it could do was the actual MPEG stream decoding on that video interface. So you had to have two connections to your TV, one to navigate your menus, and then you flip to the other one to actually watch your content. Driver just came out 3 days ago to actually use this card as a frame buffer card, though, that can display your entire X Windows session. Haven't played with it. The NVIDIA proprietary drivers and the AMD proprietary drivers are right there. Select the one you would like. Then here you have the TV out section. I actually use a DVI to HDMI adapter. In case you don't know, DVI, HDMI, same signal, same pins, they're electrically compatible. You can buy an adapter for $5 and plug your DVI video card into your HDMI TV and run 1080p. No problems at all. The only thing you miss is the audio. Part of HDMI is the audio stream actually comes in over the HDMI cable. You won't have that, so you'll have to link up through RCA jacks or whatever. But here's where you pick. If you want to use the TV out, here's where you'd pick your TV out of choice. So we're going to do, let's do component. And then you get to pick what level of HD you want to run at, or NTSC, or whatever strikes your fancy. We're going to change this back to the open source driver, otherwise we'll get the video. That HD Home Run I was talking about, it has some command line configuration utilities. You can choose to have them installed here by clicking this box. XML TV guide, this is not applicable to anyone unless you don't live or plan on staying in North America. But if you were to travel abroad with a Myst TV installation on your laptop, there are there isn't a service like Schedules Direct that we have here in North America to download TV guide data. You have to do screen scrapers across the different sites. That's what this XML TV is. And then DVB command line diagnostic utilities. DVB cards used to be for digital satellites, for connecting a Linux box directly to a DISH network satellite and getting a signal that way. The V4L guys have decided that all HD cards are going to fall into the DVB category now. So if you have an HD TV card that you're going to put into your Myst backend, or if you plan on ever going to HD, and you probably should, make sure that's checked. Schedules Direct. We'll hit that here shortly. All right, and that's the, hey, I'm going to do this install. Are you sure we're going to do this install? Yeah, I'm going to do this install. It's installing. All right, well, while this is installing, to answer your first question, and we're going to go over this here shortly, there's a website called schedulesdirect.org. There used to be a website called zaptoit.com/labs, and Zaptoit was a company that provided free program guide data. Anybody could connect to it and download their guide data. You just had to submit a survey once every 3 months. And for at least a year that I was using them, the survey was click submit. There were no questions at all. It was great.
They weren't getting paid.
Exactly. And then an overseas manufacturer decided to start shipping their guide data product and their software product without their permission and completely overloaded Zaptoit Labs' website. It no longer became profitable for them. They discontinued the service. There was a lot of hand flapping in the Myst TV community during that time because we all got used to using this one centralized resource instead of having to constantly rewrite, you know, screen grabbers and Perl and whatnot. A company was spun off by a lot of the guys that do the Myst TV development called SchedulesDirect.org. It's $20 a year, so it is a pay service, but you know it's $20 a year. And there is a free 7-day trial. You connect to it. You have unlimited listings that you can create. So when you create a listing, you define a channel source, right? So I have two listings at my house right now. I have Charter Digital, which has all the digital cable channels that Charter provides, and I have Analog Over the Air. You'll see why that's important here shortly. But what it equates to is that you can have as many tuners in your back end as you want to, and they can all have different channel sources. You could have a DirecTV and a DISH satellite, a Charter cable, and a whoever, all in one box aggregating, as I do. It's very cool. But again, $20 a month for that. So while this is installing, any questions on picking hardware, on home theater cases, remote controls?
Tell me again where you find HD channel on Charter
basis. When you fire this guy up here, right? You have two options. You can go to that SiliconDust.com webpage, and they'll.
I've scanned the channels. I've had an HD set for a year. Mm-hmm. I've scanned channels 10 different times, except for the video on demand channels. For a while, that we're getting, there were no HD channels there.
Do you know which method you're using to scan? There's QAM 256, 128, 64, and VSUB-B. Right. They don't have anything on 64, 128, or VSUB-B, you have to scan at QAM 256. 256. I've had, again, hit or miss with Charter cable. Like I said, one night I came up with dozens of HD channels. The next night I came up with two, and last night I had none.
If they were 120, that's the video on demand.
They start at 101. 105 has four sub-channels on it, and then there was a couple in the 80s. But they were all in the upper 100s, except for the couple in the 80s.
If you check 121,
mm-hmm.
And you've got
a... I'll show you. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, I think what I'm highlighting here is that it's been less than reliable. Charter has been less than reliable. All right, so... And again, I'm not trying to throw rocks at Charter. They've... the internet access has been fantastic.
They get you the bill every month.
Ha 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 ha!
So here we have the Silicon Desk website I was telling you about. This first section and the olive green here are over the air. If you just plug an antenna in, this is what you're going to get on HD. The type of modulation that they use in the HD signal is called V sub B. Alright? I have no idea what it means. So there's these are all clear text, and they will show you the format they come in on. For example, channel 26 sub 3, which is KPLR, no idea what that is.
CW.
Okay.
Comes, actually, no, that's different than CW.
Comes in at 1080i and 1080p. As we get a little further down here, we start to getting into what Charter offers. Now, according to when they've hooked an receiver up to the Charter signal, this is what they've been able to pull down unencrypted at one time from Charter. And what you'll notice with a keen eye is that there are some channels that double up. I've got KPLRT here, and I've got KPLRT here, which, from my suspicion, I believe that some of these channels have moved more than once in their lives. I'm certainly not arguing that that the TV's not scanning right or anything like that. I think our source is somewhat questionable. But I have, sitting in front of this box, I have picked up unencrypted QAM 256 channels connected right to the coax on my my Charter cable, which I don't subscribe to HD. And the next night I got nothing. I'm not sure. So we're still doing our install here. Any other questions?
On the back end with the tuner.
Yes.
When it's not after doing your recording, could it go to sleep mode or power off and then power back on once?
It depends on the capabilities of your machine. In order for it to power off and power on a specific schedule, that's something that your BIOS has to support, right? It's all part of the real-time clock on the motherboard. Certainly possible. I think the problem you're going to run into is that MythTV is very efficient in its recording scheduling, and that it always tries to record a program when you're not watching TV. So over time, it begins to figure out, hey, you watch TV all the time from 3 o'clock in the afternoon to 7. And then from 7 o'clock on, you'd never touch the TV. So it's going to try to schedule recordings from 7 o'clock on if there's a multiple showings of the same program. You can override that behavior. Like, for example, Battlestar Galactica. I'm going to get my Battlestar Galactica on Friday, and I'm going to get it at 9 o'clock. And I've told it in no uncertain terms, drop everything you're doing and record this program, and it will do it. But for my son's Scooby-Doos, man, they record at 4 o'clock in the morning. And when you forget to turn the TV receiver off and the speakers are still on, you realize that. That's an interesting thing to wake up to.
That's the mood for the day.
Exactly. Well, since we're up.
What your kids doing out of bed at that time?
Exactly. He's 3. What are you doing?
24-hour party, people.
All right, the install is complete. The install is completed. This is the next screen you're going to be presented with. The first thing here is that Schedules Direct website we talked about. Go there, register, get a username, get a password, set up your guide data. It's extremely intuitive. It will walk you right through everything. This also gives you the opportunity to pick and choose what channels you care about. For example, on the lower band of 20 channels, there's like 14 government channels and QVCs and things I am never going to watch. So you can go into Schedules Direct and you can tell it, as far as you're concerned, those channels don't even exist. They won't even show up as an option. You're not going to get the guide data for them. They're not going to be in your tuner list. They're gone. So a neat way to handle some of those jobs. Yes. Normally right now, after you've done the Schedules Direct Connect, you would launch MythTV setup. We're actually going to switch to this other box here and do that. Start now. Okay. Now this is going to be interesting because the slides are all over here. And the video card is going to be over there. So I'm going to talk to the slides, and then the slides will be available for anybody to download. There's not a whole lot of... I can later on, but not right now. All right. Now, the front ends are much easier to go into sleep mode, like you were talking about. I don't have any at my house doing it, but the front ends can be configured to go into kind of S3 sleep mode, where you can wake them up with a remote control if you're using a serial port remote. All right, that's the key. You got to be using a remote control that connects into your serial port, so you can set, you know, hey, activity on this IRQ, wake the machine up. Okay. Wow. Pardon me for a second. Should have sprung for the wireless. Okay, again, all this stuff is configurable via the remote control, but it's much faster to go this way, so I'm going to do keyboard and mouse for this. After you have gone through the MythTV setup, the next thing it's going to run you through is the MythTV back-end setup. Yeah. Which is what we're firing up here. This is something that you will probably do once, and that's it. All right, so walking through our general setup here, most of this stuff you will not have to change, except for the IP addresses. You want your back-end to be on a static IP address. If it's on a dynamic IP address, you're going to run into trouble. So you give a static IP address, and you put that static IP address here. And then you put that same static IP address here. Again, following the instructions that it tells you. What you've just done is, remember that MythTV service that we enabled? Now you're binding to the external interface instead of binding to the loopback. So remote front ends can now connect to that back end and utilize those back end's resources. But they can only do so if they have the security pin that you define. Okay? Yes, yes. Local settings, this is just some generic information that's overridable via every tuner card, but you got to have a sane set of defaults to start working with. So TV format by default, NTSC. VBI format, this is where like your closed captioning... Ooh, that's not going to work. This is like your closed captioning data is going to come in. I never set it. I don't know what that would do. I assume it would give you closed captioning data, but I've never really used it.
So you can have it so the front end, if you mute out the front end...
You have closed caption.
Show you closed caption.
Actually, one of my favorite things to do is do picture in picture. I've never done it, but you can do picture in picture, and the smaller picture usually doesn't have the audio focus. The bigger picture does, but the smaller picture can have the closed captioning running across the bottom of the screen. I've never done it, but they have, like I said, a presentation online where you can see someone doing it. This is the only one that I've ever had to really mess with, the local time zone for XML TV. By default, it's set to none. What this is your time zone offset. Sometimes in previous days with the Zap2It Lab stuff, the guide data will come in set to UTC, and there'd be no correction at all for your local time zone. And 6 o'clock in the morning is not when Battlestar Galactica is on. So you would have to do an offset in the database by hand. Huge pain in the butt. Now you set this to auto, and it will detect what time zone your guide data is coming in on, and if there's a correction that needs to happen, it'll automatically do it without you having to mess with it. Alright, so there's some really cool stuff that MythTV has done in the disk.io realm. They recognize that disk.io was becoming a bigger and bigger concern as people were adding more and more HD tuners to their machines.
Yeah, what type of spindle speed?
Mm-hmm. Is that using 7200 RPM drives. Yeah, it's just when you're writing large chunks of data, you know, anytime you have to swing that head around to do a second one, you know, it's not a problem when you have one tuner card and one hard drive. You know, that's going to be the same data stream written out. You got two tuner cards and one hard drive. Now your head's going to have to start doing a little bit of this action. You start recording two streams and then doing something else, streaming MP3s or whatever off that same drive, you get a little busy. In standard definition, it wasn't a problem. The higher definition has become a problem. So what they've done, and this actually doesn't address it here, I just take the defaults here. EIT is some interesting stuff. You can actually take on some over-the-air streams, they transmit what's called EIT data. The EIT data contains the program guide data. You don't have to go to Schedule Direct. It's there in the air. Usually 7 days where the guide data is transmitted over the air. I haven't found anything locally that transmits EIT data. I haven't looked that hard, but...
Well, it's not on Charter because they've got... there's another guide you can get that picks it up off the air.
Nice. I haven't looked real hard for it, but If it's there, this is just where you set your generic timeouts. What's up?
I've got an ITV for Mac, and mm-hmm. it actually pulls the current program name.
It's a nice. It's using EIT then.
Local high def do have that. I don't know if
high def generally does. You're right.
I don't know if they'll yield past the next program.
Okay.
I've never seen the full program.
The standard says that EIT data can be up to 7 days long. Again, it's something I haven't played with, but man, if that works, that'd be very, very slick.
I think on standard TV, it's broadcast from channel 9.
Okay.
I haven't figured out what the deal is, but it's available.
Startup and shutdown options, if you wanted to do something specific every time you start up and shut down your back end, you can define it here. Most of this stuff, you're just going to take the defaults for. If we had multiple backends, this is how many times we try to connect to the different backends. This is the one place that you will probably come back to again later. Your job queue and your user jobs. User jobs are things like commercial flagging, are things like transcoding to iPod, PSP, whatever. I have a job called lossless transcoding, which takes and cuts out all the commercial breaks and then re-encodes it to an MPEG stream suitable for DVD burning. This is where you would enable or disable those jobs' ability to run and how much CPU usage they're allowed to take. So by default, you can see jobs are allowed to run 24 hours a day, but they can use very, very little CPU. They're nice down, pretty hardcore. This is a good thing. But keep in mind, we don't have any jobs to configure now. We'll do that on the advanced session, but do keep this screen in the back of your head. The commercial flagging piece is what we were talking about, where whenever a television program is sent out to multiple stations for syndication, the program source creates a commercial flag. They have one blank frame at the beginning of a commercial break and one blank frame at the end of the commercial break. They do this so when the program is distributed to your local CBS affiliate, they can insert locally appropriate commercials. Right? I don't care about a car sale in Wichita. Myth TV, these guys figured that out. And so what they've done is they've put support in place that after a show has been recorded, a job goes back and does a commercial flagging piece where it goes through every single individual video frame, frame by frame, stores frame information in the MySQL database, and detects, hey, I think this is a commercial break, and hey, I think this is the end of a commercial break. Now, there's some intelligence in there that says commercial breaks are usually 3.5 minutes long, can't be longer than this, can't be shorter than that, to cut down on false positives. But one of the great things this allows you to do is once you've recorded a program, and once commercial flagging is run, you will never see a commercial. It will skip them entirely. It will go from the commercial break's going to begin to the show is back on. Boom, like that. One of the... Go ahead.
When you go to the back...
Whenever you want to, you don't have to wait for the commercial.
Exactly. One of the stories I was telling some of the guys earlier is I have a 3-year-old son, and a couple months ago we went to see my parents, and my son loves Scooby-Doo. Right? We were watching Scooby-Doo at my parents' house. He had just started watching it. They went to a commercial break, and he starts bawling because he wants to see more Scooby-Doo, and I realize he has never seen a commercial in his entire life. Not a single one. And on one hand, I'm so grateful because I don't think I've ever heard him saying, "Dad, I need that." But on the other hand, holy cow, somebody's got to make some money off television somehow, and it ain't through my kids, so...
But no, the younger thing is, as the kid gets older, he may not be hardened against it.
This is possible, too. If commercials were more entertaining, I'd watch them. So this is just enabling the myth commercial flagging. It's enabled by default. If you wanted to create custom jobs, you could do it here. You would set a description, what you want to call the job, and then the actual script that you're calling. Remember, Myth TV is... A program that supports all kinds of scripting languages. If it'll run on Unix, it'll run in Myth TV. So you can do some pretty wicked stuff just with that little bit of functionality. I don't know if you guys ever messed with Asterisk, but the Asterisk integration with Myth TV is fantastic. It's beautiful. I love it. All right, so let's get into the nuts and bolts. Capture cards. Here you can see I have 3 capture cards already defined. We're going to get rid of those. We're going to re-add them. The capture card dialog lets us select our card type. Remember talking about the video for Linux BTTV type cards, the software encoders? That's what these analog V4L capture cards are. MJPEG cards, older Matrox cards, Fly Media, DVD Firewire type of things. MPEG-2 encoder. If you buy a PVR-150, the standard definition Hoppig cards, that's what this is. It's an MPEG-2 encoder card on a PCI bus, and you will notice it automatically detected the video device and the card itself and the IPTV driver. I actually have two cards, remember, installed in here, so I wanted to be able to show you that. But most of you, I'm sure, are going to be buying the high-definition cards because it becomes increasingly difficult to find the standard definition cards, in which case you're talking about a DTV capture card. What you'll find here is the DVB device number. I've only got one of them installed, so I only have that as an option. And then the front-end ID. The chip on here is a Samsung QAM-type HDTV chip. That's how you know you actually got it installed and running correctly, is it'll have a front-end ID there for you. If that's blank, something's wrong. Signal timeouts, this is when it does its HDTV lock. Tuning timeouts, again, part of the lock.
Since it's done by the QAM, it's only a cable code?
No, it'll do QAM and VSUB. So HDTV is either transmitted in QAM or 8VSUB. Right? 8VSUB is usually what's over the air. It'll do either one. Basically, it's defining its highest capability. And this card, all these cards you can buy will do QAM 256. Most everybody transmits in either QAM 256 or QAM 64. I haven't found anybody that does QAM 64 out here. The over-the-air channels, if you just want to plug an antenna in, are all 8VSUB. So now we have a DVB card defined. But that's not all. Next, we define our video source. This is where that Schedules Direct website comes into play. So I got to browse a web page here to get the internet access working again. All right. I don't like how they named this video source. I think they should call it guide data, but hey, whatever. So I'm going to call this video source name HD Channels. And we're going to use this schedulesdirect.org website. Put in the user ID that you registered. Yeah, I know. Your password, and then hit retrieve lineups. It goes out to Schedules Direct, it pulls your lineups up, and loads them back in. I have two lineups defined on Schedules Direct, Charter Communications Cable, and Local Broadcast Listings. Local Broadcast Listings is what has the over-the-air HD for how I was originally configuring this. There's that EIT scan we talked about. You can actually select this to perform an EIT scan to see if there's guide data available. Just check that little box. And then your channel frequency table. This is going to be, is it broadcast over the air? Is it cable? Is it cable on just the high band? Pretty much all your HD channels are going to be over 73, channel 73 and above, which is in cable parlance defined as high band. Or is it going to be in the low band? Or are you in Japan? We're in cable high band for HD. Yeah, US broadcast was the very first one. Now that we have the card defined and the video source defined, we have to tie that video source and that card to a specific input, right? So we have the contingent pieces. We have our DVB card, and our DVB card only has one input. I'm going to call it high def. And now we have to define its video source. We just defined that on the video sources thing. We went to Schedules Direct. And by picking that video source, I've now told MythTV, this tuner card is capable of tuning these channels. Don't try to do anything else. Just grab these. All right? I don't know what that does. So, when we were talking about Charter, one of the things that all the HD cards can do is they can detect right off the bat if an HD channel is encrypted or not. By unclicking this checkbox, it will allow this tuner card to try to tune in to encrypted channels. It's not going to work, but you'll at least be able to see them all scrolling past. Leaving that checked, it'll only grab the unencrypted channels that it knows it has a chance at displaying. Audio-only channels. Charter, at one time, broadcasted all of their streaming music channels in ClearQAM HD. So you could tune into them on basic cable. They don't seem to do that any longer. And if you're plugging this card into a DISH network, satellite dish, they do actually do the long-term EIT data, which is 14 days instead of the standard defined 7 days. You're more than welcome to play with that. So we're going to do scan for channels because it's kind of fun. And what we have here for our options are full scan. We can import a channels.conf file that already has the HD channels defined. Or we can do a full scan of existing transports. I don't know what that does exactly, but it doesn't seem to pick up any channels. So we'll do a full scan. We're going to do broadcast. I remember saying broadcast was on terrestrial 8VSB. This is a cosmetic piece right here on how you want those high-def channels to be displayed. So is it 5-sub-1, 5-1, 5.1, 5.01, 51? Take your pick. The key thing to remember here is if you want to sit down on the couch and directly tune an HD channel, find the underscore. There isn't an underscore. So 5.01, that's a good bet. So I'm going to let this run so you can see what it looks like when it's trying to tune in an HD channel. You can kind of see in the background there that it timed out scanning channel 2, scanning channel 3. It'll continue on through the entire cable listing range. It does take a while. Nope, I got nothing. It's not going to find a single thing, but just wanted to see what it looks like. So we'll just cancel out of that. So we have now created a video card, a channel source, and we've tied those channel sources to an input connection. All right? Oops. I forgot to import. There we are. I'm going to add one more capture card. This is going to be the PVR series cards. They show up as Dev Video 0, or Video 1, Video 2, whatever. And we're going to do the same, adding a video source. This time it's grabbing my Charter cable listener. And we're going to tie my Dev Video Zero's tuner 1, which is the analog tuner, to that video source. In this case, you can either scan for channels again, or you can do fetch channels from listing source, which means it actually goes out and grabs those channel listings from the Schedules Direct website and pulls them in. It just pulled them in. It gave me a starting channel of 2, so every time I turn this tuner on, it's going to go straight to channel 2. If you really want it to go channel 4, channel 5, whatever, you can pick your base channel that it comes to every time you connect to that tuner. And we're done. Okay, channel editor, if you wanted to edit the channels, if you wanted to change their names, whatever, go for it. Now this is the piece I was going to talk about where they've done some interesting things with Disk.io. Used to be we would take and we would use Linux LVM and we would use various striping strategies to have one LVM pool ensure that specific directories were written to specific disks, right? What the Myth guys have done is they said, okay, let's create storage pools instead, where you can create a default directory for each specific type of content. So if I say create a live TV group, or is my live TV content going to go to, and I give it two directories, it's going to load balance across those two directories for every time it has to do a write for a specific tuner card. So you get automatic disk load balancing by using the tuner group. We'll go into that more on a later... Yes, I know what I'm doing. No, it'll be a couple months. I'm going to do the same presentation again tomorrow for, I assume, a different audience. This second piece that's running here is the MythFill database, where it's actually going out, grabbing guide data, and inserting it into the database. This should run pretty quick, and then I'll do a couple little walkthroughs on what MythTV looks like, and we'll be done. We'll see if I can do some of these actually without the back end running. All right. So without the back end running, we can't do watch TV until that database is done loading. But we can go into our media library. And in our media library, I've taken and a DVD that I have at home, I've copied it to an ISO file. And I have that DVD's ISO file sitting on this hard drive. MythTV will read an ISO file just like it'll read a DVD. All right? I have about 150 DVDs at home. I've copied them all to ISO files. I have them all on one share. when you pull up this screen on my Myth TV at home, I've got all my DVDs laid out. I've got them organized in a folder for my son, organized into Battlestar Galactica Series 1, 2, 2.5, 3, etc., Firefly, whatever. And you can have full DVD access, including menus, special features, alternative audio tracks, all from the ISO file.
So this Myth TV breaks the content scrambling on commercial DVDs?
No, that's another program. But that's for a later issue. <later. laughs> I took the DVDs, I ran them through DCSS myself, broke them into ISO files, and then copied them over. It can play an encrypted ISO. If you figure out a way to do a bit-for-bit write of an encrypted ISO, it will play it, because it does have the codecs installed to properly decrypt and play an ISO file. But these are all unencrypted. One of my favorite features of Myth TV is the time stretch feature. Remember me talking about how a DVR has just a couple purposes, and one of them is to compress the amount of TV you need to watch. Man, you can do that by commercial flagging.
Pegasus.
Alright.
How could I take the entire fleet?
One of my favorite features here is we go to time stretch. And I want to play this at 150% speed.
The officers and the crew of the Pegasus, welcome back, Colonial Fleet.
What editing was wrong?
Notice what didn't change. That's the pitch. You had 150% speed. When the pitch doesn't change, it's still pretty easy to understand. So now we'll go back to regular speed.
As I take command of Pegasus, I pledge to uphold those values.
It almost feels like it's dragging along. You can slow it down all the way down to 30% speed. You can speed it up to 200%. I watch Jon Stewart every night at 150% speed. It takes a half-hour Jon Stewart program. Cut out the commercials, you're down to 22 minutes. Run it at 150% speed, you're at about 12 minutes. I got 12 minutes to spend watching TV.
Like The Godfather?
You know, and the funny thing is, you get used to that speed. You get used to having it at that rate. So
I'd like to do that with the news. Is there any way to just grab the audio after you compress it?
Actually, through MPlayer, MPlayer is installed on here, and one of the things you can do with MPlayer is you can set up a user job that we went through with a video output of null and just an audio output of MP3 and get just your audio. But why do that? Well, when you can stream the whole thing over the internet and just get the audio anyway. Let's get to that real quick. Listen to music. It'll play your MP3s. One of the really neat things about this, I've got the MP3 playing in the background. If I wanted to, I could have the visualizations running on the big screen, whatever. But let's say I want to do something else, but I still want this music playing in the background. When I exit the MP3 player, I have the option of continuing the music playing in the background or stopping it entirely. We're back to the main menu, and we're still listening to our happy little MP3s. I'll quit that. This is my wife's favorite feature. Play online streams.
Now, you wouldn't be able to go to CBS and watch their online
program. You may be able to. It all depends on. All you have to do is set up a. There's my interconnection.
I think they are caching their programs online
somehow. The ones that a lot of companies have specific readers set up that you can watch their programs on, but those are proprietary. They're not going to work on. Well, I was hoping this was going to work, but it looks like I'm having a hard time getting out. If this was up and running, we'd be able to watch the Indiana Jones trailer and the Hulk and all that fun stuff. Basically, all the trailers at applemovies.com. We have Shoutcast support. We have Worldwide Media Project. Different podcasts, different radio stations, different online TV stations. NASA TV is stimulating to watch. Image Gallery. Family and friends come over, just set it off, playing in the background, doing a little slideshow of all the photographs.
Sure, you have Free Fire playing in the background, yeah, so you can come over here and kick it off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just let it roll. Let it play. The OpenGL transitions, all that fun little eye candy. And play games. There is full MAME, SNES, you name it, support built in the Myth. You plug in a USB joypad, you put your Super Mario Brothers ROM on Myth TV, and you can play Super Mario Brothers in all of its 8-bit glory.
On a 52-inch screen.
But only for more, no longer than an hour. Manage recordings. This is where you're going to go in and you're actually going to set up what you want to see. This is the guide data that was downloaded from Schedules Direct. And my wife is a huge fan of CSI. So I would like to record just that showing of CSI, or she hasn't seen any of this season's CSI. She wants to get caught up. So I prefer to record CSI at any time on any channel that the guide happens to find it. I leave the scheduling entirely up to Myth TV, and it will catch me up on every single episode of CSI without repeats.
In Kansas City, it's like they have CSI in two different channels, different episodes, like three or four episodes a night on each one.
If you have the tuners to do it, if it's doing multiple recordings at the same time, it can utilize every single one of them all at once. We've had, at most I've had, is three channels being recorded at once. And I was thinking, my God, how much TV really do I need to watch? This is true. Yeah, two times the speed with no commercial breaks. There's a program finder in here. You can search by program names. You can search by specific words, people, all kinds of fun stuff. There are some pre-canned search lists. So you could search for movies. You could search for movies of specific categories. You know, just give me an action movie, whatever. There is a database and a music manager for MP3s, yes. Where you can go through and you can search for format. You can do smart playlists where you can do ratings on each song. And just give me 4-star songs. Custom records and manual records are when, I have no guide data for this. It's going to be on channel 3. It's going to start at 7. It's going to end at 7:30. Sorry, I'm trying to speed up because I know we're out of here soon. Priorities. Remember me talking about that I will see Battlestar Galactica on Friday nights? I can raise the priority of any recording that I have scheduled to say, this guy's going to get bumped up a notch. I want it now. And unless a recording has a higher priority, nothing's going to take the place of that show. Get a quick little list of upcoming programs that are coming on the wire. And you can delete recordings, and you can go through your recording database. Now, one of the neat things that you can do here, it doesn't show it here, but when you connect to the Myth web interface, your previously recorded database gets some statistics run on it. And so you can find out, hey, I watch a lot of CSI. Or, hey, I watch, my next favorite show is Scrubs. And it'll store your viewing habits and give you a display of what those are. I was really surprised. And then I found out that my wife likes CSI. Information Center, this is what I was talking about. Myth TV is a SIP VoIP phone. Myth TV can read RSS news feeds. It can get movie times for your local theater. Browse through and see what time Spiderwick Chronicles is on. It can get the weather if it can connect. It can't connect. So there's our current conditions. There's our severe weather alerts. There's our current radar, 6-day forecast, Yeah. Manage your Netflix queue. Connect up to Netflix. If you got a queue, you can manage it from there. Surf the web. Very painful to read the font, even on a high-def TV. And system status. This is just a neat little, tells you kind of at a glance what's going on with the box. Your version, the last time guide database information was pulled, how much guide data you have left, 14 days. Your schedules, so we have a recording schedule already defined. What each tuner's doing. If a tuner's showing live TV, it'll say showing live TV. It's recording, it'll say it's recording. Any kind of log entries, any kind of, oops, something's wrong here, we'll display there. Job cues. Commercial flagging. So I recorded a bunch of static on accident on Channel 4, and after I recorded that static, it went through and it flagged it for commercials. And this is just telling me, hey, that job is finished. If it didn't work real well, I could re-queue that job and make it run again, all from the screen. Status on the machine, that's the amount of RAM installed, swap, disk space available. It's not displaying because of the resolution we're running at here, but it would actually say, you have blank many hours left running at your average bit rate of. As you can see, with 180 gig of free space, I have about 72 hours of storage left. And auto-expiring. Myth TV records everything. Even when you're viewing live TV, it's being recorded. There's two advantages of that. If you decide halfway through a show that you've been watching from the beginning, man, this is a great show, just hit the record button on your remote, and it'll grab from the beginning all the way to where you're at and finish out that show. So you know you have that stored. You have to be tuned to the beginning, right? But you don't have to be in the room. You could have, you know, walked in there and said, "Hey, this is a great show." Whoops, walk away, and come back and say, "Man, I really wish I could watch this later." Hit record, and it'll grab the whole thing from start to finish if you had it tuned to that show at the beginning.
So it's important to have multiple tuners.
It grows. I'm telling you, it grows. But that'll expire. Let's say you're watching a live TV show and you didn't like the show and you don't want to keep it around sucking up disk space forever and ever and ever. Myth TV, after a couple days, will automatically expire some of those live TV shows that you chose not to record. Anything you choose to record, it keeps until you say delete it. But if it recorded it just out of normal operations, it'll automatically expire it. Save you some disk space.
You have made an emphatic choice, and it's in that auto-expire, and you decide then you want to...
It'll keep it.
Then you want to record it. So you can pull down menu and select it. Mm-hmm. And change the status.
Absolutely. Okay. Obstacle disc, what use would it be if it couldn't play a DVD?
Yeah, but what about laser discs?
There you go. I don't know about Blu-ray. But I do know it plays the Schoolhouse Rock DVD series very well.
Larger than a first DVD.
You can import a DVD. You can rip a DVD straight from here, pop it in, hit rip DVD, and it'll say, "Hey, you want to copy this to an ISO file, an MPEG, a DivX, an AVI, what you want." Archive files. Now let's go back to that CSI series we recorded. We love the CSI series. And we want to keep it, but we don't want to burn up a whole lot of disk space. Let's burn it to a DVD. A DVD that has menus and chapters and all that fun stuff you can do right from here. No fuss, no muss. And then the setup screen that we've already gone through. You can remap keys on your remote control if you want to through this screen here. And then the general setup that we've already touched on. One big problem you're going to have with your PC is overscan and underscan. PCs connected to TVs. Every TV signal comes in with the knowledge that it's going to be overscanned on your TV, which means while your picture may be this big, the actual frame data coming in is this big, right? And if you were to view the actual frame coming in raw off the TV, you'd see these nasty black borders all around everything. And that's because the signal is designed to go on a CRT that wraps, right? And so part of those black bands were going to go around the edge. So they knew to just put the content right in the middle. You can adjust for that here. So I think I've... Exactly. I think I've run us out of time. But... that is the quick and dirty. I apologize for not getting to spend as much time as I would like, but the setup, you saw the setup, you saw the install. If you can click a mouse, if you can install Linux, you can install this. The key thing is spend the money on your tuner card. Go ahead and get a good one. Make sure it's supported. You'll have a lot less headaches later on. And don't be afraid to blow it away and restart over and over and over again until you're happy with what you get. It's very configurable, very powerful, which means you can screw it up in all kinds of unique ways. Anywhere from, if you go with a hardware-based TV card, anywhere from $60 to $115, $120.
The most expensive one for probably our Newegg is $140.
That's probably the PVR 500.
I didn't know that.
There's a PVR 500, which actually has two tuners on one PCI card. That's going to be your most expensive card. I think it's actually about $170. But every card that's in this machine, the HVR, the HVR 1600 that Hoppe gave us is $88. That comes with the remote and with the IR blaster and everything you need to really get up and running. I've got four standard def and I've got one high def that I don't actually have working correctly. And it fluctuates a lot. I mean, sometimes I'll have just the two. One machine, quad core, 2 GB RAM. And it's the load's always very, very minor on it. I could do with a lot less hardware, most likely. Now, my disk subsystem, my disk, when I ran an HD Parm against them lately, it was running about 390 meg. So I do have running 7 SATA 7200 RPM drives. 500 gig RAID 5, all software RAID. So you know, I do have a lot invested in drives. you certainly don't need to go to that extent. But I live so close to EPC.
Is that a blessing or a curse?
They've got my number. They know. Thank you guys very much. Thank you very much. For the giveaway tomorrow, it's going to be the complete HVR 1600 with the remote control, the IR blaster, and all the adapters and doofliffies that it came with. It's a great card. It will not work out of the box in Mythbuntu. It just, the driver's a little bit newer than what the CD is, but the install for the driver is ridiculously simple. Whoever wins it, I'd be more than happy to give you the four lines of command it takes to actually do the install.
As Sam said, if you sign it,
there you go, bud. Thanks.
Yeah.
Don't come back in.